All right, so I want you to just picture the standard history textbook version of World War II. You know, the one.
Oh, yeah, the heavy ones from high school.
Exactly,
Yeah.
yeah. You've got the treaties, the economic sanctions, the battles over territory, the egos of men like Churchill and Stalin. It's basically a political map, right? It's logical. It's all about borders and resources.
Right, it's the version we all learned, just straight cause and effect.
Yeah, cause and effect.
Yeah.
But what if that map is, well, I don't want to say wrong, but what if it's just the surface level? Like, what if World War II wasn't just a geopolitical conflict, but a very specific, calculated attempt by spiritual forces to actually break a biblical prophecy?
Wow. I mean, that is a massive question to start with. You're essentially asking if the entire war was a cover for something else entirely.
Right. And I don't mean this metaphorically either. The source we are diving into today argues that the Third Reich was an actual occult experiment designed to prove the Bible wrong. It suggests that if Hitler had won, it wouldn't have just been a new government, it would have been a theological impossibility.
It's a wildly provocative premise. It kind of completely reframes the entire 20th century, doesn't it?
It really does. And to get there, we're looking at a really fascinating and frankly very fresh source today. We are breaking down a transcript from a presentation titled The Fall of the World, Lesson 3.
And when you say fresh, you mean really fresh.
I mean hot off the press. This was recorded just yesterday, March 1st, 2026, from a channel called New Life Benson.
So this isn't some dusty archive from, a seminary in the 1950s. This is happening right now.
Exactly. And the context is really key here. This isn't a history professor standing in a lecture hall at Oxford. This is a community group, essentially a church meeting, trying to make sense of the exact world we are living in right now. They're looking at what's happening in Russia, in the Middle East, right here in March 2026, and they're trying to tie it back to ancient texts. We're talking Daniel, Revelation, Ezekiel.
Which is really what makes this deep dive so interesting. The mission today isn't just to recount history, it's to unpack how this specific speaker connects those ancient prophecies to the rise of the Nazis, and then, and this is the part that really hooked me, how he connects it to the geopolitical tension we're seeing in the news this very week.
It's a worldview where history is basically a chess match between God and Satan, and the board is just the map of Europe and the Middle East.
Right. And to understand the Nazi connection, or even the Russia connection, you have to understand the rules of this chess match. The speaker spends a significant amount of time establishing what he calls the Fourth Kingdom.
Okay, so let's start there. Because for someone who hasn't opened the Book of Daniel since Sunday school 20 years ago or, ever, what is the setup here?
So the framework the speaker uses, which is a fairly classic theological view, is that there are four great earthly kingdoms predicted in the Bible. Historically, theologians identify these as Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and finally Rome.
Okay, so Rome is the fourth. Got it.
Yes. But here is the catch, and this is where the timeline gets a bit sticky. The speaker emphasizes that the prophecy regarding this fourth kingdom isn't actually finished.
Wait, really?
Yeah. The Roman Empire fell, sure, historically speaking, but the prophecy describes a final phase, a revived Roman Empire, if you will.
Oh, revived Roman Empire. I mean, that sounds like a sci-fi movie title. How does that manifest in the real world, according to this theory?
He describes it as a 10-nation confederacy, a highly concentrated block of power arising out of the specific geography of the old Roman Empire, so largely Europe.
Okay, a 10-nation confederacy in Europe. And the speaker is very specific about how this kingdom ends, right? It doesn't just like fade away into history like the others or get conquered by a fifth guy.
No, and that is absolutely crucial for the rest of his argument. He cites the biblical text saying this final kingdom gets violently smashed, it's uprooted and destroyed by a stone cut without hands.
Which he identifies as.
The return of Christ. It's a supernatural intervention. So in this worldview, the timeline is totally rigid. Four earthly kingdoms, and then boom, the kingdom of God. That is the script. There are no deviations.
And what I found really compelling was his attitude towards skepticism here. He basically tells the audience, look, check the scoreboard.
Huh, right. He directly challenges the listener. He says you really can't be an intelligent skeptic if you look at the track record. Babylon, predicted and happened. Medo-Persia, predicted and happened. Greece, happened exactly as predicted.
So his logic is, if the first three were historically accurate down to the very letter, you'd be a fool to bet against the fourth one.
Exactly. He argues that the final phase of the fourth, this 10-nation confederacy, must be treated as an inevitable fact. It has to happen.
But here's the problem, and I think this is where you listening to this might be pausing. If you look at the world stage right now in 2026, That specific power block doesn't quite exist yet. We have the EU, we have NATO, but not this specific hyper-powerful 10-nation superstate he's describing that basically runs the world. So how do we get from here to there?
Right, and this is where the speaker gets into what he openly calls conjecture.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a fascinating piece of geopolitical conjecture. He ties it to Ezekiel chapters 38 and 39. He starts talking about the king of the north.
Which in this context usually means Russia.
Most likely Russia, yes.
Mm-hmm.
The theory he presents is that this northern power forms an alliance and attacks Israel during the tribulation period. But, and here's the key, they lose. No. And they don't just lose a conventional battle. The text suggests God intervenes directly and wipes them out. The speaker mentions the entire army being destroyed on the mountains of Israel.
Okay, so just imagine that for a second. Geopolitically, Russia and its major allies are totally decimated in a single event. That creates a massive, unprecedented power vacuum on the global stage.
Precisely. That is the aha moment in his theory. If the northern power is gone, just wiped off the board, who steps in to fill that void? The speaker argues this vacuum is exactly what allows the Western, Roman-based 10-nation confederacy to finally rise up and dominate the world without any real opposition.
So chaos in the north paves the way for the rise of the west. It's like a massive geopolitical seesaw.
Right. And he places this timeline roughly in the middle of the tribulation period. It's a working theory as to how we get from the messy reality of now to the exact parameters of the prophecy.
Okay, so that's the political layer. And if you stop there, it would just be an interesting theory about future politics. But then he peels that back and goes, okay, but why did World War II happen the way it did? And that brings us to the concept of the Fifth Kingdom. And I have to say, this was the part that made me actually stop the recording and rewind, because it's such a weirdly logical argument.
It is a totally unique logical argument, isn't it?
Mm.
Think about it from the perspective of this cosmic chess match. If God's plan is incredibly strict, four earthly kingdoms, then God's kingdom, what is Satan's absolute best move?
To break the sequence.
Exactly. You don't just fight the armies, you fight the script itself. If Satan can successfully establish a fifth earthly kingdom, a world empire that isn't in the prophecy at all, he literally breaks the timeline.
Yeah.
He proves the Bible is untrue. It's a way to definitively checkmate God.
Man, so it's not just about power or land or resources. It's about invalidating the scripture entirely. If a fifth kingdom stands, the prophecy fails.
And the speaker points to one major horrific historical event as the ultimate attempt to build this fifth kingdom.
The Third Reich.
Adolf Hitler.
Now, we've all heard about Hitler being evil. That is, you know, established historical fact. But the speaker isn't just saying he was a bad guy with bad ideas. He goes incredibly deep into the idea that the entire Nazi regime was a literal occult project from the ground up. And he brings receipts. He cites some specific books to back this up, right?
He does. He heavily references The Morning of the Magicians by Pauls and Bergère and another book called The Hollow Earth by Eric Norman. He uses these sources to argue that Hitler wasn't just a charismatic political dictator, but an actual medium, a literal vessel for spiritual entities.
The descriptions he reads from those books are terrifying. There's that one account where Hitler wakes up in the middle of the night.
That part was chilling. The source describes Hitler waking up screaming, convulsing in his bedroom. He's standing in the middle of the room, swaying, looking around like he's totally lost. And he's shouting, "It's he! It's he! He's come for me!" and pointing to an empty corner of the room.
He's speaking to something that no one else can see.
Yes. And the speaker explicitly calls him a temporary vehicle for demonical forces. The core argument here is that a human being, just a regular flesh and blood guy, couldn't have swayed an entire modern nation like that, couldn't have committed those atrocities on that mind-boggling scale without being actively amplified by something else.
And it wasn't just Hitler either. The speaker extends this to the entire inner circle, Himmler, the SS. He paints a picture of the whole regime being structured exactly like a dark cult.
Well, you just have to look at the SS Cathedral.
Here I am at Wolfsburg Castle. I've seen pictures of this place. It looks like something straight out of a horror movie.
It really does.
Yeah.
The speaker notes that the SS leadership had to swear allegiance to dark powers before they could even get their death's head insignia. This wasn't just standard military protocol or taking an oath to a country. It was an occult ritual. He talks about the Black Order and the massive influence of General Haushofer.
Haushofer, he calls him a warlock, doesn't he?
He does. A warlock and a black magician. The speaker claims Haushofer was a member of the Society of the Golden Dawn, and actually initiated a secret Buddhist society in Germany that was entirely focused on death and sacrifice.
And didn't he mention something bizarre about how Haushofer died?
Yes. He mentions that Haushofer and his wives were eventually found dead on a Buddhist altar. It just paints this vivid picture of a regime that was deeply, deeply committed to ritualistic magic. They weren't just playing dress up with these symbols. They fundamentally believed this stuff worked.
He also mentions Tibetan monks in Berlin, which I had honestly never heard of before.
The Black Monks. It is a bizarre historical detail. He claims there were hundreds of Himalayan Orientals found dead in Berlin when Germany finally fell. They had no identification, no paperwork, and they were allegedly acting as spiritual mediums for the SS. The idea here is that the Nazis were importing occult power from wherever they could find it, East, West, ancient, modern, all to fuel the rise of this Fifth Kingdom.
They were trying to hack reality.
Essentially, yes. They were trying to rewrite the rules of the world using dark spiritual forces.
But then, and this is where it gets really strange, he brings in the Hollow Earth theory. Now, usually when I hear Hollow Earth, I think of Jules Verne novels or weird deep web conspiracy forums. But the speaker treats it as a core foundational belief of the Nazi leadership.
It is definitely one of the stranger elements we cover, but the source material is very specific about it. The speaker explains that the Nazis, or at least key figures within the upper echelon of the regime, genuinely believed the Earth was hollow and inhabited by superior beings.
He called them the lords of the universe.
Right. And their goal wasn't just geographical exploration. It was a strategic alliance. The claim is that the Nazis believed they desperately needed to ally with these ancient forces from the Hollow Earth in order to conquer the surface world.
Man, that puts a whole different spin on their motivation. They weren't just trying to conquer Europe for political gain. They were trying to merge with some subterranean power to create an entirely new species.
A literal super race, yes.
Which is terrifying. But what I found most disturbing was how the speaker connects this really high-level occult craziness down to the way they treated everyday people, specifically children.
That connection is vital to his argument because it shows how the theology directly impacted the brutal reality of the regime. He argues that these occult beliefs trickled all the way down into everyday societal indoctrination. He mentions the werewolves, which was this adolescent group given black uniforms and death head insignias.
But it was a lot more than just giving kids creepy uniforms.
Right. He notes that the concept of children reporting on their own parents, which was a terrifying hallmark of the Gestapo state, was actually derived directly from occult writings regarding the Hollow Earth.
Wait, so the surveillance state had mystical roots?
According to this source, yes.
Oh.
The idea was to intentionally break the natural bond of the family unit in order to serve this higher, dark, spiritual order. If your ultimate allegiance is to the lords of the universe or the creation of the Fifth Kingdom, you don't care about your parents anymore. The state replaces the family.
And it ties perfectly into the racial ideology, too. The speaker quotes Hitler describing a new and exalted nobility, essentially framing them as demon man beings versus what he called baser forms of life.
Which brings us to the absolute darkest part of this history, the Holocaust.
Yeah.
The speaker reframes the Holocaust completely. In this specific theological view, the extermination of the Jewish people wasn't just horrific ethnic cleansing or brutal political scapegoating. It was a calculated spiritual strategy. The speaker explicitly calls it Satan's attempt to exterminate the promised seed.
Because if you look at the biblical prophecy, the Messiah, the stone that eventually smashes the kingdoms we talked about earlier, comes from that specific lineage.
Exactly. If you wipe out the people, you wipe out the promise. You physically stop the fourth kingdom from ending the way God said it would. If there are no Jewish people left, there is no fulfillment of the prophecy. Satan wins.
It's the fifth kingdom trying to prevent the final judgment. It is really heavy stuff. It makes the war feel less like a battle for territory and more like a desperate cosmic intervention.
It frames the entire Second World War as a moment where the Third Reich fundamentally had to fail. Not just because the Allies had better tanks, or more men, or better industrial output, but because a Fifth Kingdom simply is not allowed to exist in the script. It was a metaphysical anomaly that the universe had to correct.
Now, what's fascinating is that the speaker doesn't just leave this all safely in the 1940s. He brings it right up to the present day. And I actually love the little mundane details here, like Right in the middle of this intense talk, he casually mentions the group is heading to Vindy's afterwards.
Vindy's, meaning Wendy's.
Because Wendy's cousin Vindy. It really grounds you in the moment. This is a group of regular people meeting in a room, maybe a library or a church hall somewhere, having this incredibly intense discussion about demons and alternative history and the fate of the entire world, and then they're just going to go eat burgers and fries together.
It's very human. Yes. There was that specific question from the internet audience about an Iranian missile and the Dome of the Rock.
Yeah, talk about a hot topic in these circles.
Oh, absolutely. The listener wanted to know, if the Dome of the Rock had been destroyed by this recent Iranian missile, which apparently was a very near miss in their current timeline, would that finally open the door for the Third Temple to be rebuilt in Jerusalem?
And this is a huge obsession in prophecy circles, right? The rebuilding of the temple is like a massive ticking clock.
Huge. It's considered a major prophetic milestone. But the speaker's answer was actually quite surprising. He didn't just say, yes, absolutely, grab your shovel, let's go.
No, he was way more cautious than I expected.
He was. He said the destruction of the dome wasn't necessarily a strict prerequisite. He hinted that the actual historical location of the temple might be slightly different than popularly believed, or that the sequence of events works differently. But it clearly shows that this group is constantly watching the global news feed with an open Bible in their hands. They are actively looking for these specific geopolitical triggers. They see a missile launch in the Middle East, and they don't check the stock market. They check the Book of Daniel.
He also touches on some closer-to-home cultural issues. He seems pretty concerned about the removal of Bibles from American schools.
Yes, he references the Madeleine Murray O'Hare case from the 1960s. He draws a direct, unbroken line between removing scripture from public education and the rise of what he calls sanitized evil in modern society.
And that brought up a comment from an audience member about mediums in the workplace. That felt very specific and weirdly modern.
Right. The audience member shared a personal anecdote that her previous corporate job actually paid a lot of money to bring in mediums for what I assume was some kind of progressive mindfulness or corporate team building exercise.
And the speaker just jumped all over that.
He really did. Because to him, there is absolutely no difference between a corporate medium in 2026 and the SS occultists in 1940. Mm-hmm. He views modern New Age spiritualism as just a nicer looking, repackaged version of the exact same ancient occultism. He calls it sanitized. But to him, the dark source powering it is exactly the same.
It all circles back to this core idea of deception. He thinks everyday people are being lulled into accepting these dark forces because they seem so normal and harmless now. It's not a scary guy screaming in a black uniform. It's a mandatory team-building exercise with fruit smoothies.
Which perfectly sets up his final timeline. He closes the entire presentation by telling his audience exactly what to look for next.
The trumpet.
The trumpet. He firmly believes the rapture is the next immediate event on the calendar. He tells them to literally be listening for the trumpet that removes the believers from the earth. And after that, complete destruction. He describes a coming time of judgment where God and Satan's conflict reaches that final kinetic phase we discussed at the very beginning.
It's a worldview where there is absolutely no middle ground. You are either on one side of the chessboard or the other.
Precisely. And for the listener of this particular lecture, everything from a stray missile in the Middle East, to a corporate retreat with a psychic, to the dark history of World War II, is all connected by this single invisible thread of spiritual warfare.
So what does this all mean for you listening today? We've looked at the ancient prophecy of the Roman Confederacy, the vacuum theory with Russia, and this wild occult Fifth Kingdom attempt by Hitler. It is a lot of heavy material to take in.
It really is. But I think what stands out to me the most is the airtight internal logic of it all. Whether you accept the premise or completely reject it, the source provides an incredibly consistent narrative where history isn't just random. It isn't just one damn thing after another. Yeah. It is a highly contested script that is actively being fought over.
It definitely changes how you look at the evening news. It creates a lens where chaos, like the potential collapse of a major power like the King of the North, isn't just a random disaster. It's a strictly necessary step. It's clearing the board for the final move.
Exactly. It turns geopolitical anxiety into prophetic anticipation. Instead of just being afraid of the chaos in the world, you start to see the chaos as actual proof that the script is moving forward exactly as written.
Well, here is a thought to leave you with as we wrap up. The speaker suggests that the Fifth Kingdom was a failed occult attempt to force a new world order that defied the ancient texts. If that's true, And if we look at the massive power vacuums forming in the world right now, especially if we consider his theory about Russia and the rise of the West, how does that influence how you interpret the next big global crisis?
Is it just human politics? Or is it the clearing of the stage for something much, much older?
That is the question you have to ask yourself. Thanks for diving in with us.
See you next time.